Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
I said that almost like I'm taunting somebody.
I know. That was a weird opening for you.
Sorry about that.
That did not have your usual sonorous tones to it.
No, I don't know what it was. We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Hi, Jordan.
Dan!
Yep.
I got nothing for you right now.
Wow.
Yeah. When was the last time you opened the show with a weird tone of voice?
Today. Boo on your interview.
I know. I come up with a question right off the top of my head.
Yeah, they're usually not great. I usually have to dig out of a ditch with your bland ass question.
Well, now I've just raised the difficulty level.
Come up with a question
dig
to
out
ask
of this
myself.
Ditch, huh?
Oh boy.
I'm just testing you.
I refuse to. I have a hostile partner in this, and I will not bend to the whims of a terrorist interviewer.
Oh, that's not fair. I'm no Somali pirate.
That's true. So, Jordan, today we have an interesting show ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
I am excited to get into what we're gonna get into. We're doing a time travel episode today.
Ooh.
At the behest of policy wonk Joshua. I'm very excited to get into the topic at hand, which we will explain momentarily. But before we do, we gotta say thank you to a couple people who have joined up and are supporting the show. So first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Sam. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Did I explain this is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones and you just know what I tell you? I don't think we did that.
Did we not do that part?
I'm not sure. That's my interview question. Anyway, if we didn't, that's what we are.
My answer to most questions is, I don't remember what we were talking about 5 minutes ago.
Anyway, thank you, Sam.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Kelsey, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Also, Cody, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Cody.
Next, Katie. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
Next, and finally, Miles. We'd like to thank you so much for taking your donation and bumping it up a little bit.
What?
We very much appreciate that, and in honor of your generosity and your support of the show, you are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bow, 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 bow. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean
black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, Miles.
Thank you very much, Miles.
If you'd like to support the show and what we do and become a policy wonk, you can go to our website, knowledgefight.com, click that button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Indeed you can. And also, just as a reminder, you can also go to fillyourhand.com and click the support the show button.
Now, before we get down to business too much, and I don't want, look, this show isn't going to turn into Delilah or something like that and us doing song, requests for people out there on your long drive.
Okay, it sure sounds like we're about to do a Delilah episode.
I cannot resist whenever.
Where are you coasting tonight?
When I get a nice message from somebody, I'm prone to help them out in any way I can. And I got a very nice message from Grace, and she wanted us to know that there's a policy wonk out there by the name of Bruce who's having a birthday, and we wanted to take a little bit of a moment to say happy birthday out there, Bruce.
Happy birthday, Bruce.
We appreciate you listening and your support. I hear you got a podcast about UFOs. That's pretty fun.
That sounds cool.
I don't know. We could talk about the Dulce Bass. You want to send me a message? We could talk about the Dulce Bass. You know about Dulce?
I swear to God, it is the boring underwater bass.
No, it's not underwater.
It's the Dulce Bass.
Oh, yeah, that's where your mind goes with it. No, it's not that.
It's how it is.
The Dulce
Bass
is in New Mexico underground.
The Dulce
Bass. 17 floors underground. There's aliens experimenting with humans. And Bruce knows about that because he's into UFOs.
I will accept that it could be a less reflective third letter of the alphabet bass.
Oh, I see what you're saying there. It's been polished too much.
It's burnished. It's burnished.
Yes, perhaps. Yeah. Anyway, Bruce, happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday, Bruce.
God bless you. and hope all is well. Anyway, Jordan, today we are getting into this time travel episode on the request. Well, I wouldn't say demand. He was very nice about it. Of Policy Wonk Joshua. Now, today we're going back to September 25th, 2011. And it's always a fun game to try and figure out if you have any idea what a date might be that someone would send me back to.
Okay, so this is 9/25/11, right?
That's correct.
All right, so this is right after 9/11.
Well, 9/11/11. The 10-year anniversary. It's a little bit after that.
All
right. Yeah.
So,
never forget.
2 weeks after the towers fell.
2 years, 2 weeks.
10 years, two weeks.
Ooh, shit. Yeah.
No, I have no idea what was going on on September 25th, 2011.
This is about Occupy Wall Street.
Oh, okay, cool. I bet he has really awesome, progressive, positive things to say about Occupy Wall Street.
Now, before we get into this, I want to say that I have no idea what to expect.
Uh-huh.
According to their own website, Occupy Wall Street was, quote, a people-powered movement inspired by popular uprisings in Egypt and Tunisia and aims to fight back against the richest 1% of the world that are writing the rules of an unfair global economy that is foreclosing on our future. Based solely on that, Alex Jones should be against them, since he thinks that the uprisings in Egypt and Tunisia were globalist false flag uprisings, so that should be a red flag that this is just another one. On the other hand, while Occupy Wall Street was not targeted at the Federal Reserve, it definitely had the appearance of being a community of people who could be red-pilled by the info warriors and become them themselves. So maybe Alex would be in favor of it, since it could serve as a pipeline to him gaining a wider audience. On the other hand, the beginnings of Occupy Wall Street grew out of the publication Adbusters, which is definitely anti-consumerist and pretty certainly anti-capitalist. So that seems like Alex would be very against them.
This is so infuriating when you know the answer of what is going to happen in this episode.
On the other hand,
this is so infuriating.
You have the optics of people standing against the police.
Uh-huh.
It seems impossible for Alex not to be on the side of the people. So it feels like he would have to either be on board with Occupy Wall Street against his principles or completely ignore it so he doesn't have to side with the police.
Are we doing Vicini? Are we doing the Princess Bride? Is this Iocane powder going on right here?
On the other hand,
oh god damn it, we are doing Vicini.
They were literally protesting bank malfeasance, and that's one of the main pieces of Alex's like primary brand. So it seems like he might try and side with them, but at the same time ignore the parts of what the protest stood for that are diametrically opposed to his worldview.
You truly have a gift for rhymes, my
on
friend.
The other hand, the stuff the protests stood for that are opposed to his worldview, that's really important stuff. Redistribution of income, forgiveness of student debt, putting restrictions or limitations on bank profits, putting restrictions on excessive executive compensations. All of these things are not things Alex is into at all. And in fact, he believes that some of them are the evil goals of the globalists. And plus, Michael Moore was involved, so how could Alex possibly be on board? What I'm getting at is that when Policy Wonk Joshua proposed that we do this episode about what Alex Jones thought about Occupy Wall Street, I had literally no idea what I was going to find. The ball could fall in any slot on this roulette wheel.
Mm-hmm.
In choosing a specific date to go back to, I decided to choose September 25th, 2011. I chose this date because though Occupy Wall Street began on September 17th, I felt it was probably likely that Alex would be slow to hear about it or talk about it, because that seems to be his trend, except when it comes to Somali pirates. As we
right, apparently
episode.
Somali pirates
very
is
quick on the uptake
right, on, right on the ball.
However, on September 24th, at least 80 protesters were arrested, and videos came out of police roughing up protesters who are peaceful, corralling them with a large net, and a video of Officer Anthony Bologna macing young female protesters. I felt if there was any day that was going to be the day that Alex would talk about Occupy Wall Street as a positive or as a negative, this was going to be the day that he was triggered. And so we jump in on the 25th of September.
I swear to God, if this is about Somali pirates again, I'm going to lose my shit.
It's not. I don't actually know, like, you're pretending that I know a lot, even though I know what the clips are going to be and all that. I don't really know that much.
We don't know where he actually lands?
I mean, we'll get to it, but it's hard to say exactly.
Is he conflicted?
I'm going to tell you ahead of time, like, this is probably going to be one of these, like, preludes of things to come. I think that Occupy Wall Street, the entire span of it, is where I'm going after 2009.
Yeah.
After I get, my fill of Alex's,
okay. I gotcha.
Like the Tea Party stuff.
Yeah.
Once
yeah,
that
yeah.
comes into a better picture for me, once I get a handle on the Soros stuff, all mm-hmm. that stuff in 2009, I believe that looking at the entirety of the Occupy Wall Street, and Alex's positions on it, I think that would be a fitting next investigation.
Yeah.
And the glimpse that we get here, I don't think is complete at all.
Uh huh.
So that just know, I know what's coming in the clips, but I don't, I don't know big picture what's going on.
All right. Well, that means what's coming in the clips is going to be wackadoo shit.
Well, somewhat. So he starts the show. Oh, this is a Sunday show too. So it's like, it's only a 2 hour show.
Uh-huh.
But also, I thought that that would be better
back
in 2011.
Because it's our soft launch.
Right.
Sundays.
Back then he had more distribution SLSs. Through NS Communications
yeah.
on Sunday than Genesis Communications had at their disposal. So it seemed very possible that the Sunday episode would be more meat.
Yeah.
So we jump in and we start with Alex just kind of bragging. Kind of in a fun way.
That's normal.
We are broadcasting worldwide, blasting out on the AM and FM dial, global shortwave, and of course satellite number one on the internet at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com for online streaming and podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. You have found it, the tip of the spear, the front line in the info war, as we attempt, in some cases with great success, to alert free humanity to the dangers of historical tyranny.
Cool. The only thing that I get whenever I hear that kind of beginning, when he's like number one on global shortwave and stuff like that. Do you remember when the 3-6 Mafia won an Academy Award?
No.
They won
what?
For Hustle and Flow soundtrack. They won an Oscar.
Oh,
for that.
Yeah.
And so their next song was Dope Boy Fresh. I stay dope boy, dope boy fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. That video.
I don't remember that song, and based on the way you sung it, I am very glad.
Oh, God, it's so good.
It doesn't sound like
guest starring Chameleon Air.
Man, how long has Chameleon Air been around? If he'd invested better, he'd be Chameleon Air by now, yeah.
That video for it is awesome. It's just a Being John Malkovich rip. They just do uh-huh. Being John Malkovich, but like Being 3-6 Mafia.
Okay.
And so there's like people going into the little nook that takes them
right,
into the
right,
monitor, and they're just like doing a music video, but it keeps flashing. Did
Michel Gondry direct this?
I don't remember who did, but it was one of those guys.
Yeah.
It's a really good music video.
Okay.
But the reason I bring it up is the song starts with 3-6 Mafia Academy Award winners. Like they were hyping up that they won the Academy Award.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the next
song
is.
You're really not selling me on this song. Or this album.
The reason I'm bringing this up.
Or 3-6 Mafia at all.
The reason I'm bringing this up is because the next single they had after that, it starts with 3-6 Mafia number one ringtone. It's a little bit of a scaling down of the brag. But their songs in that era consistently opened with them bragging about something. And when I hear Alex like, number one on shortwave, I'm like, that's just 3-6 Mafia shit. So,
number one ringtone.
Yeah.
All right. Give me Schoolboy Q any day. I don't need any of this Chameleon Air bullshit.
So I thought that was funny, but it's just kind of like standard stuff. It doesn't tell us anything about what's going on.
Quick question. So Chameleon Air, is that a pun on chameleon?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Okay.
And millionaire.
It's a portmanteau. I got that. Yeah. I got that part. I just wasn't sure, was he, or like, was his name, like, Cam or something like that, you know? Like,
no,
I just wasn't sure.
It starts CH.
It's CH. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But it's a chameleon and, millionaire. It's
chameleon
portmanteau
and millionaire.
He's like adaptable.
Yeah.
And also
yeah.
a millionaire. That's.
I get it.
Anyway. That opening doesn't tell us that much. It's interesting, too, to like always, when we do these time travel things, to go back to periods in Alex's career where we have a great context of like who he is and how he processes information, just
right.
based on a brain level. But I don't know what he's been up to in 2011.
We had Somali Pirate Day. Who knows what's going to happen?
Or when we looked at Ebola Day, you know, like there's a lot of like in 2014, he had different waypoints than we're used to. And I was expecting that we would find different waypoints here. One of them, it turns out, is by September 2011, Alex Jones is really into the Tea Party.
Obviously, we've got an information overload here. And I've not been getting a lot into politics because most of these people are horses owned by the very same stable, owned by the very same operation, the globalists, like a Don King boxing match. But we have a real contender in the arena,
a great
in this
white
rigged
hope,
game, who's not rigged, and so the system is pulling out the stops. Of course, his name is Ron Paul, but I think it's important
there
to just go over a few of the dirty tricks they've run against him and illustrate the fact that even the corporate shill media is admitting that the Tea Party, people who actually are constitutionalists...
Are they?
The Republicans have basically failed to co-opt it. Rick Perry has failed to co-opt it. And the Tea Party is destroying Rick Perry.
So he has now taken ownership of the Tea Party by this point. We're already starting to see kernels of that in 2009. Like,
yeah,
when he has Stuart Rhodes in, and they're talking about being able to go out and radicalize people at the Tea Party and stuff like
that.
So it seems that at some point between these two points in time, he's accepted that, like, I can associate with this.
Yeah, so that's
interesting on some level.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's super into Ron Paul, but that's no surprise at all.
No, everybody's cool with that.
And, of course, this is also in the lead up to the 2012 election, so Ron Paul's running, you know, like...
And Rick Perry sucks, so...
It's true.
You can always hate on Rick Perry.
Alex ended the Endgame documentary bullhorning Rick Perry's house about how he went to Bilderberg, so...
Yeah.
You know, he's been a long-time villain of his.
But yeah, Rick Perry sucks. We're good.
Unfortunately, I should tell you that Alex's critiques of Rick Perry aren't always based on policy, and sometimes they drift into the homophobic.
We've also got to take out politically the other Ken doll, who's just as bad or worse, and that's Mitt Twinkletoes Romney. He is a clone of Rick Perry, except for the fact that he's from Michigan, not from Texas. And he has not attended Bilderberg that we know.
Okay.
And he was not a male cheerleader. Normally, to be a Republican contender, you've got to be a male cheerleader as of late. Rick Perry, of course, is a male cheerleader, like George W. Bush and others. And Trent Lott, the rest of them, part of the Twinkle Toes pillow-biting club or whatever they're part of.
Really?
That's homophobic. Really? That's where we get into trouble.
Oh, that's where.
That's where we got into trouble.
Not the Twinkle Toes part?
Hey, come on. Who is it? Who hasn't said Twinkle Toes? That was a characterization that was given to Aang in Avatar, The Last Airbender, Dan.
Listen, context matters.
Toph gave him the nickname Twinkle Toes.
Context matters.
Because he was an airbender. All right. I assume that Alex Jones is describing both Rick Perry and Mitt Romney as airbenders. Now, admittedly, they would not be airbenders.
The firebender wasn't a pillow biter?
The firebenders were all fascists. Well, not all of them.
Okay.
Let me tell you more about the
legend
of...
Please do.
What?
No. How does it relate to Dune?
Oh, boy. So, with Avatar, The Last Airbender,
clip. I don't want to hear it.
Because I can relate it to Dune.
In much the same way as on our last episode, we got blindsided by an episode that we expected to be about something, and then it became something else. It became about the Somali pirates out of nowhere. The same way, I'm expecting to hear something about Occupy Wall Street, or I'm expecting Alex to keep talking about Ron Paul, but instead he gets distracted by something I could never have expected to...
There's a bee in the studio!
People are waking up to the game that the WHO has talked about. You know, I was driving in today listening to 93.7 LBJ, the local rock station, and listened to the WHO song, Won't Get Fooled Again. And this was something, this was music that came out in 1971, and they're talking about the left-right paradigm. They're talking about the scams. They're talking about how it's a two-party dictatorship. But finally, decades and decades later, more and more people. Well, Congress has a 9% approval rating, the lowest in history.
That's been a talking point of his since the fucking 2009. He's never changed the approval rating. So look, dude, he just goes on a TED talk about the, won't get fooled again.
Man, look, and you know what? This is one thing I'm not going to fault him for. All right.
Yeah.
It is a lot to put out 4 hours of content every day.
No, totally.
So I get it. You're driving to work. Whatever it was you thought you were going to talk about that day isn't, you're not getting it up for it for whatever reason.
You know what? It's just like that WHO song, Baba O'Reilly. This is a teenage wasteland.
There you go. You know what? You fill your time with what you got to do.
I guess, but like.
I accept that.
But that's what shock jocks do. That's what, like, that's what people who have low stakes shows do.
Yeah.
Alex is pretending he lives in the world of high stakes, espionage and governments talk to him and listen to his show. He insists on doing like 20 minutes on the importance of won't get fooled again. It's crazy. Like, to the point where, in this next clip, it starts with him reminding people who they are.
Oh, the who they are.
Exactly.
There you go.
But he doesn't bring up who are you.
First, maybe if you're younger or older and don't know who the who are, I should play a clip of this song to remind you. Here it is.
Yeah, no one's ever heard this before.
You've heard that before.
I love that. You've heard that.
Yep.
We're going to come back after the break and actually play some of the pertinent sections from the piece about meet the new boss, same as the old boss, won't get fooled again. But I wanted to remind you of the Who. By the way, Jaron was down at his favorite place to watch soccer on television. You don't mind if I say where you go watch soccer, do you, Jaron? He loves it. Fido's down there. He's always trying to get me to go down there.
All right.
And guess who was there? Robert Plant. And I almost could strangle Jaron for not going up with his iPhone, his producer phone, and shooting a quick interview with Robert Plant. Nobody was bugging him in there. Most people didn't even know who he was. I guess he owns one of the teams. His team was losing, the team he was watching. And Jaron didn't go over and talk to Robert Plant. And then Jaron pointed out, well, my iPhone's so old, the producer iPhone is so old, it doesn't shoot video. So I have to get a new producer phone. But side issue.
No shit. It's a side issue on a side issue.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, the train of thought is the Who.
I got to remind you who the Who is.
The Who is a band from many decades ago.
That's correct.
Who has been played on the radio.
One of perhaps the most famous rock bands of all time. Top 10 at least.
If you are on this planet and you have not heard a Who song, you are in the minority.
In the top 50 rock songs of all time, they probably have 10. No, not 10. Like
not
five.
10, like 4.
5.
I'd give them 4.
Baba O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Who Are You? Won't Get Fooled Again.
Right.
Something Off Tommy. Pinball Wizard. Let's go with that. I was getting real aggressive.
You were coming out hot, and then you ran out of gas quick.
Something off Quadrophenia. I don't know.
All right, so we start there.
They have a lot of really, like, huge songs. Like,
they're kind of a big deal.
Huge. You don't need to remind your goddamn audience who the fucking Who are.
Let me remind you my target demographic of old white people.
Right.
Who the Who is.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Beep, boop, boop, boop. You remember this. Go
next
fuck
thought.
Yourself.
Next thought. Now that I've reminded you who the Who is, I'm going to bring up unrelated personality Robert Plant.
One of my producers ran into Robert Plant while watching soccer.
Yes, yeah. So we're in, you should have taken your Adderall this morning levels of conversation right now.
Secondary revelation though, and this is something that I think that most people who would listen to this wouldn't pick up on, but I think is actually super important.
He can't afford a good phone?
No. At this point, in 2011, Alex gives his producers iPhones.
That's true.
He hates Apple. He hates those companies. And yet he is using the products as, the producer phones.
And he doesn't even give them a good enough one to shoot video.
Well, he couldn't have cared about those, like, anti-Apple narratives back then. That has to have been a new addition to it.
What does he use? A Samsung now? There's no phone that's in his ideological bent.
I'm sure he still uses Apple products, but just like, Tim Cook's a monster. Yeah. Who cares? It's just an illustration of he prefers simplicity over standing with his
principles. Well, how many holistic healers have we had on this show always tell a story where they're like, and I had to go to the doctor one time, and you're like,
Oh, doctor, huh? In this next clip, Alex is doing a dramatic reading of the lyrics of Won't Get Fooled Again, and then makes a claim that I know is not true.
I'll tip my hat to the new constitution, take a bow for the new revolution, smile and grin at the change all around me, pick up my guitar and play just like yesterday, and I'll get on my knees and pray we won't get fooled again. Don't get fooled again. No, no. By the way, I have confirmed from folks that most of the Who are huge fans of the show. And if you're listening out there, you ought to come on the show.
Some of them. Only some of them pedophiles.
Bigger than the who I've talked to who are listeners but won't come on.
Cool. You got big fans. Whatever. I want to tell you this. In a 2015 interview, Pete Townsend, the guy who wrote all the songs on Who's Next, the album that Won't Get Fooled Again was on, had this to say. Quote, I think that music has always suffered from being tied to any kind of political or social or even spiritual or religious connection. I suppose the Who were rebellious, and I suppose for a while we were, or seemed to be, anti-establishment. But that wasn't us, really. I think we were just reflecting what was going on around us. So, interesting. Also, Won't Get Fooled Again was originally written to be a part of the Who's scrapped sci-fi rock opera Lifehouse. They realized they should just let Tommy stand alone, so they abandoned Lifehouse and put the song on the album Who's Next. Also, the song wasn't really even about the real world. It was written to be the closing song of that rock opera, and when you actually look at the lyrics, they kind of inspire apathy as opposed to revolution, a criticism that many have leveled against Townsend over the years. And that criticism seems deserved, seeing as Townsend has described the song as one, quote, that screams defiance at those who feel any cause is better than no cause.
Yeah.
It's a rallying cry to have no position. Like defending your right to remain silent, kind
right.
of, in the face right, of right, social right. upheaval.
He's also a pedophile.
Alleged, probable. Lifehouse was it was a quintessential rock slash prog rock opera. It was set in a dystopian time when rock and roll was gone and people were oppressed and given bland entertainment, but a select group of people and a wizened old guru kept the secret knowledge of the power of rock. Secret,
man.
But alive.
Prog rock was so good. I love me a good yes.
It probably felt fresh in 1970, and the cocaine obviously helped, but this is basically the same plot of Rush's 2112 and tons of other concept albums, not least of which Deltron 3030. Anyway, my point here is that Alex could not be more wrong about The Who. They were art school weirdos who shied away from any true revolutionary sentiment, even as it relates to this very song. The song may have been adopted by many people with revolutionary intent, but that was never the interest of the band. They were largely just, like, there. And you can see it in Pete Townsend's later career. Like, he's gotten more involved in, like, the Philharmonic and stuff like
right.
that. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. The idea.
I like a good concept album.
I do too. I
do.
Love it. Yeah.
Have you ever heard Masayoshi Takanaka's Seven Goblins?
I have not.
Yeah. You should check it out.
Maybe I
should. He's a guitar virtuoso.
I will say that I liked concept albums a lot more back when I used to get high all the time. I'll say that they were perfect for that.
Yeah.
That immersive experience of like, this album is telling me a story along with music. It's great.
Do you want to have a really boring conversation about M83 and whether or not he's doing concept
Certainly
albums,
don't.
But not telling people he's
Certainly
doing concept
don't.
Albums? Are you dope?
Nope.
All right.
So Alex is, you know, he's doing his misguided TED talk about The Who, which I think is very interesting on some level.
Do you?
Well, if only because it's not interesting. You know, if that makes sense. Like it
does it?
It's out of place. It's weird. It takes up a large chunk of the show. Like at least 15, 20 minutes he's spending talking about this Who song that has been out for 30-something years at this point. 40 years at this point, almost.
To me, it feels like if I were to start...
Had he not heard it before?
Yeah, like if I were to start explaining like 90s hip-hop from St. Louis and the surrounding area to you...
Right.
Let
me tell you about the members of the Lunatics.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And you're like... I've been alive.
I know that City Spud was in prison. I get it. That's why the first album was called Free City. Second album was called City Free.
Hold on a second.
Got out of prison.
I understand.
I know about Ali and Big Dip.
Are you a 60-year-old white guy? Let me tell
More
you about a band called Led Zeppelin.
Freak out.
Oh, no idea. Holy shit. You don't even know that there's a California hotel that you cannot get out of.
That's the Eagles. But isn't
this
crazy?
I
understand. Isn't that crazy? I just was worried you'd get an email.
Oh, I was also worried about that.
It's just nuts to me. Like, why waste your time? You're in the middle of, like, trying to defend Ron Paul about, like, why he's running for president.
Right.
You've got Occupy Wall Street happening that should be either something you're super into or super against, yet you've got to dissect the goddamn Who.
Although, on the other hand, perhaps it makes even more sense because his dichotomy is Ron Paul and Occupy Wall Street. What song could be more fitting than Apathy from the Won't Get Fooled Again lyrics? Because Ron Paul has already fooled him. None of what Ron Paul says is true.
No.
And the Occupy Wall Street for him is a clear lie. So he won't get fooled again by either of those. And instead, he will not get fooled by instead talking about Won't Get Fooled, Dan.
Perhaps. Or it's just a way of putting off having to say anything real.
That makes more sense.
I don't know.
I'm going to go with you.
Any of this is possible, but he goes into this. He spends a good bit of time about that. And then he goes to commercial, and I heard a commercial that I'd never heard before that I think is really interesting. And it's one of these rare instances. Like, a lot of the time you'll hear a fucking messed up commercial on his show.
Yeah.
Like that Most High Family Monastery.
Oh, that was fucked up.
That was super fucked up. But that wasn't Alex doing the voiceover for it.
Right.
Or like all of his commercials that he's done for like the Israeli Tourism Bureau.
Right.
Those are packaged commercials that are sent over and he's played. He makes money off it. But this one he's doing the voiceover for. And it just...
I'm here to tell you today that I have a modest proposal that you guys should look into. There is a new food company out there revolutionizing the way that we eat our children.
What if he advocated for Soylent? What if he did that? What if he got on board with Soylent real early?
It's not green. It's not green. It's still people.
This is Alex Jones, and I just want to let you know, it is made of people.
JK, just kidding, just fucking with you.
So when I heard this commercial, it struck my ear really weird, because first of all, I found it to be cagey.
Uh-huh.
I found the specifics to be lacking.
Uh-huh.
And that led me to have to figure out what this was a commercial for. And when I found out it's a scam, and Alex did the voiceover for it.
A very wealthy U.S. citizen is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He says it will change everything about our lives. The way you shop, travel, invest, educate your children, and even how you take care of your health and your own family.
Now, this man has made
some outrageous predictions over the years. The crazy part is, he's usually right. You see, he predicted the collapse of GM, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and America's biggest mall owner, General Growth Properties. In fact, Barron's called his work a dire prophecy. Recently, he created a video, which you can watch online for free, detailing his biggest and most important prediction yet. And it's a real eye-opener. I can't stress this enough. You should at least watch this free video online today. He explains everything you need to know, including simple steps you can take to protect yourself. You can find the video at www.endofamerica3.com. That's endofamerica3.com. Watch the free video at www.endofamerica3.com. That's endofamerica3.com.
He just says the URL four times at the end there. Also, it's not the third installment. I bet he just couldn't get the URL.
So if you're writing an ad, not to, show how the sausage is made.
Right.
But the call to action should be towards the action you want, as opposed to that call to action, which makes me want to go, well, what the fuck's up with endofamerica1.com?
Right, I can't go.
You're not selling me on endofamerica3.com until you sell me on endofamerica1.com.
I can't jump in on Return of the Jedi without seeing the first two.
Yeah, what are you doing?
So, End of America 3 is the work of a guy named Porter Stansberry, which Alex is very keen to not say his name in the commercial. Very wealthy American is saying this. That's Porter Stansberry. And to put it simply, he is a fucking con man. Alex is not just running a commercial for him. He did the voiceover for it, and he plays it four times during this two-hour episode. He's pushing this, or at least he's getting a lot of money, which takes up this advertising time.
Yeah.
Stansberry is a fraud in the vein of most of Alex's guests. He spreads fear of a pending collapse and advises people to subscribe to his expensive newsletter for advice, and also he advises them to buy gold and silver. His credibility was based on the claim that he has that he had predicted the collapse of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Problem is that the only evidence of this prediction is him saying that he predicted it after the fact. In a funny turn of events...
That's how the best predictions work.
It's true. In a funny turn of events, one of Stansberry's harshest critics was fellow Alex Jones guest and notorious gold bug Peter Schiff, who studied all of Stansberry's newsletters from 2006 to 2008 and on his own show called him out and said he was a liar.
What? What are you doing? You're breaking the code,
yeah,
man.
Peter Schiff took him to the woodshed.
Dude, that's bullshit. That's con man's code. You don't fuck up another man's con. That's just rude.
I mean, it kind of makes me respect Peter Schiff a little more. Not much.
Yeah, but
a
I assume there's a con man high council that got together and censored Peter Schiff because of this.
And there's also a possibility that, like, he was working against Peter Schiff's scam interests.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there wasn't like a way.
It's a turf war.
Yeah, maybe like a cut it off at the pass kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there are a lot of similarities in terms of like selling newsletters, advocating for where you buy your gold and silver from. It's possible. Yeah, turf war is entirely possible.
Turf war makes sense.
Whatever the motivation is, I do enjoy seeing these Alex Jones guests supporters beef.
It's pretty fun. It makes me so angry, but because it does prove that they can research.
True.
Did you spend 2 years looking at this guy's shit and then using real world information to synthesize whether or not it was fucking valuable? Oh, have you thought about doing that before?
Well, I mean, they do. They just spend that time instead of researching the truth, fine tuning the scams.
Exactly.
So, but that's because that's what's most profitable. Like, that's
right.
If we did that, we would have a fucking Bitcoin operation going, and we would have cashed out long ago. But instead, we do this, and I'm glad some people like it. In 2003, the SEC filed a case against Porter Stansberry for selling false information to his subscribers. He claimed to have insider tips that a certain stock was going to go up, but it did not. An investigation found that he had just made up the source. And in 2007, he was sentenced to pay $1.5 million in restitution to the people he had defrauded. He tried to pull a First Amendment argument, but the court rejected it because, quote, Stansberry's conduct undoubtedly involved deliberate fraud, making statements that he knew to be false. The sentence was upheld by the Fourth Circuit Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case because why would you?
Yeah.
The episode that we're listening to where these ads are from comes from 2011, years after Stansberry was charged with intentional fraud. And here Alex is doing a voiceover for the commercials for his new fraud.
Wow. That is...
Alex has no fucking moral compass. He doesn't give a fuck.
I didn't know that. You didn't even need the definition of the word unscrupulous.
Yeah.
You could just show that.
It's nuts. Like, the idea of him
words to describe what unscrupulous means when you could just tell that story?
Well, the idea of him doing, like, Alex doing exactly what he did in 2011 in, say, like, 2005, 2006, something like that, for Porter Stansberry, before he was charged by the SEC and had to pay out $1.5 million for defrauding people.
How does he have $1.5 million?
Because he defrauded a ton of people.
I know, but, like, that's a really good fraud. That's too good. It's too good. That's why you get into trouble.
Yeah.
You can't fraud that good.
Like Icarus, you frauded too close to the sun.
Yeah, you gotta pull back on your fraud.
Yeah. So I find that interesting, and I always like to check in with where his monetary sources are coming from, and great to find out that in 2011 they're no more ethical than they are at any other point.
Nope.
But like we've already sort of seen a little bit, beyond wanting to talk about the Who, Alex seems mostly into Ron Paul today.
Yeah.
And in this next clip, we see that he's fucking super into it.
And I was driving in listening to local radio today, I heard a host asking his listeners, why are you saying Ron Paul is a first tier?
He contains multitudes, Dan.
When he came in fifth or whatever it was in Florida. Why do you guys keep insisting he can win? And I heard a few callers who really couldn't articulate things. Let me articulate things for everybody out there, okay? Ron Paul has won the two coveted CPAC polls in a row by record percentages. That is a Republican straw poll of the real Republican faithful.
Now, this is a misrepresentation, because I don't know if you remember this during the Republican primary in the 2012 election.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney announced ahead of time that he was skipping straw polls. He did not engage at all. His campaign made it very clear. We are only focusing on caucuses and primaries. These straw polls, it will be a waste of our resources. So in the first straw poll that came out, Ron Paul was way up there. Mitt Romney was way low because he put no effort into campaigning, no effort into being involved in the process of it at all.
Yeah.
And so that gave people like Alex Jones this incredibly false hope that Ron Paul had the goods to go the distance. And he fucking didn't. These indications of the, like, what Alex pulls out first in terms of his defense of Ron Paul is these straw polls. And if you know anything about what was going on, you would know that that is a, I don't know, what is it? A hollow victory. You know, it's like, yes.
Pyrrhic.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
You beat Santorum. I hope you would. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, like, as I recall, it was like him and Bachman were at the top of the straw polls.
Not good.
So, like, but Mitt Romney would have won them if he was involved, as evidenced by all of the primaries that started happening.
Yeah.
And Mitt Romney just started steamrolling.
Yeah.
So
people in the Republican Party didn't know that they could be that racist in the 2011 or in the 2012 election.
Sure.
They were all like, oh, there's a black president, so obviously people want multiculturalism. There's no way to win on a purely we hate black people platform. So let's pick like a Mitt Romney or like. It wasn't until Trump really showed them that you can let your racist flag fly that they realized that Ron Paul probably would have beaten
if
Obama.
Ron Paul would speak freely, he could be elected now.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Not before.
Right?
And he probably could have, maybe he could have gotten elected if he spoke freely before, because he would have galvanized a lot of that bigotry.
If they had just gone full racist, they probably could have beaten Obama in 2012.
There's a decent chance, which
right?
is really scary.
That's what we should have learned from Trump winning is that if they had gone full racist, we would have had a one-term Obama.
If Ron Paul hadn't have denied writing all those newsletters and stuff like that, you might have seen an acceleration of where we ended up 4 years later.
Exactly.
But it's hard to tell because he's also not nearly as charismatic as Trump, you know, like in a just sort of a broad sense.
In a reality TV show
He's a sleepy old
sense.
Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What have you. And also he's boring generally as a orator.
Yes.
And also his brother thinks that three people voted for the Federal Reserve Act.
Let's be honest. He thinks that three people voted for the
Federal Reserve Act.
I'm certain
he thinks
that also.
Come on. Yeah.
Come on.
So it's just all Ron Paul defense that's going on. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of I've cut out because it's just straight dog shit boring.
Yeah.
Just him being like, Ron can win! I don't need to hear that 100 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We will hear a little bit more of it later. But before we do, we got to check in with what Alex thinks about the highwaymen. Does he... Does he want to sing along with them in 2011?
What year are we not going to find out how he feels about the highwaymen?
Well, in different years, he has different responses to it.
Okay.
Sometimes it just plays, and sometimes he sings along with it.
Okay.
Let's see how it goes in 2011.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride.
Sword and pistol by my side.
There it is.
Sword and pistol by my side.
Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Who is this, Bill Clinton?
Whoa, we got jokes.
You can trust me, I'm good. Global warming's real, pay Al Gore money.
That's not bad. In terms of his impressions, that's
right.
Not bad.
Currently.
It's an easy impression, but that's not bad.
That wasn't a terrible. That was easily his best impression that we've ever seen.
Yeah. That's a good impression of the standard Bill Clinton impression. It's basically him doing an
impression
of
Daryl
Hammond.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
But at the same time, fine.
Daryl Hammond was great at it.
Still better than his impression of Adomian's burning.
Yeah,
or whatever he's doing. Anyway, in this next clip, like I said, most of this show is about defensiveness about Ron Paul, and this next clip follows that same theme.
I mean, this is so elementary that it makes my head spin sometimes. That you've got a guy who has come in first, second, or third in every scientific poll of hundreds and hundreds I've seen, who wins all the spontaneous internet polls that I believe are even more scientific because you can only vote once according to your IP address, who's winning every one of those, usually in double digits.
What?
In fact, in every case, by double or right at double. And they're saying, sorry, he can't win. Sorry, he's not a choice. Sorry, he's not a contender. That'd be like if there was a guy in Formula One racing who had won races, coming second and third and a bunch of others. They're in the pole position out of the gates. And with 80% of the race to go, they're in third place, and their car is picking up steam, running great, and they say, it's too bad that the Marlboro car or the Jack Daniels car or whatever it is, or the Chevy car, too bad that car can't win.
I think a more apt...
One of those three can make a car.
I think a more apt metaphor would be like, okay, so you're doing this race, and the guy who has the best, like, way faster car wasn't in for the first two laps. And, you know, your car is going fine. It's maybe running out of its – it doesn't have any more boosters on it. It doesn't have any more NOS.
Doesn't have any NOS. We're getting into Fast and Furious.
Yeah, yeah. And so what you got here is you're doing fine. You're going around the course and what have you. But the guy who has the much better, faster, sleeker car and is better at driving it is now in the race and he's gaining on you.
You're right.
And
right,
people
right.
who have just a, like, I don't know.
Because Coke's bought his rockets.
You bet.
Yeah.
And so there's a legitimate way to look at it. It's like, well, let's say he's in third then. That's a great position for him to be in at any point. But he's only in third because Mitt Romney is gaining. Everyone fucking knew. I remember this. Everyone knew.
No one was.
There was a tiny piece of the conversation that Santorum had a chance. A tiny piece, but no one really believed that.
No.
It was.
Well, that's because we all know that Santorum is the frothy mixture of fecal matter and lube that occurs after anal sex.
Right. There was that came out of the election as well. I think his metaphors are weak. I just think he's not dealing with reality. But why would he? He's fetishizing the idea of a Paul candidacy.
Of course.
And that's cool. That's just sort of to be expected.
That was the thing that a lot of people did.
No, totally.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge him for it. But it's interesting to see that there's so much going on in the world. Like legitimately, the day before, 80 people who were peaceful protesters were arrested at the Occupy Wall Street encampment.
Violently.
Yeah.
Violently arrested.
And the other people were pushed to the ground, roughed up, pepper sprayed. And these are white people.
Really
many
close
of them.
Really which, close to Kent State.
You
like,
would think,
really close to Kent
you
State.
You would think that would trigger Alex. Like, you'd think that seeing these young white women being sprayed with pepper spray would be like, I'm going to start my show talking about this, but somehow it's not. It's very weird. And to me, that, I think, is a strong indication that he doesn't care that much.
He doesn't care at all.
He might care a little. I don't know, but he cares more about Ron Paul. And he's really pissed off that people are saying that he can't win to the point where he can't do his show.
Okay, look, it's so elementary and so simple that Ron Paul is being cheated that I've gotten so angry today that I have hardly been able to talk. I rarely stumble about, and I've done that some today, because it's so ridiculous to watch the entire establishment running scared from Ron Paul.
He's presenting this idea that Ron Paul is being screwed, but most of that I really think is, because I've gone back and looked at some of the primaries from 2012, because it's kind of relevant to like trying to figure out Alex's political trajectory.
Yeah.
As it related to especially turning into Trump shit later. And one of the things that I noticed is that, like, the only reason that 2008 and 2012 were different for Ron Paul supporters is that in 2008, no one fucking thought he could win. Even his supporters didn't think he could win.
Yeah.
But in 2012, because Mitt Romney didn't participate in the straw polls that came earliest in the primary season.
Yeah.
And because there had been the 4 years of the Tea Party galvanizing movement where people were more engaged and that weirdo
white nationalizing movement,
maybe not necessarily as overtly back then, but you could call it libertarian energy.
Sure.
That was sort of growing this farther to the right or weirder to the right, than the GOP. That energy had existed for a few years. So when those two things intersected, the, Mitt Romney not participating at the beginning of the primary season and this swelling of the appearance of massive grassroots success, 2012 was a heartbreaking experience for people who actually bought into it because there was the perception that he could win. At the beginning of the primary season, there was an idea, I mean, based on unfortunate coincidences that didn't depict the reality at all, but there was a perception that he could win. And Alex is presenting this idea, I think, that he's being screwed, based on the fact that all that momentum that was gained by Mitt Romney not being involved in the campaign sort of dissipated as Mitt Romney got involved in the campaign.
Right.
Alex is trying to also, on this episode, help Ron Paul, because he doesn't like to give advice.
Oh, no.
In this instance, he's going to.
Oh, he's not going to give advice.
And I think this advice is bad.
I don't ever try to call Ron Paul up and give him advice, but I think I am. And it's this. He needs to get up at the next debate and say, hold on a minute, and hold up a sheet and say, the average candidate was given 10 minutes in the last debate. I was given 4 minutes. I've been given the least amount of time in every debate. And the moderator is saying that in the question. Say, listen, I know you got an agenda. Give me the floor. And I know Ron Paul can get angry.
First of all, I know Ron Paul can get angry. Not great. Here's a great strategy. Seem entitled.
Yeah. That, again, worked.
Be a whiny dick.
That worked.
But it worked for Trump because it was aggressive.
I know.
It
would come off as, I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
So I've seen it before. Okay. Yeah. It's always the nice guy that's being real friendly. That's because they're actually a Tyrannosaurus. Only guy on the congressional baseball team to ever knock out a home run.
What?
Wait, whoa. Pause that clip right the fuck there. What? Ron Did you Paul? Research that?
Fuck no.
Did you research that? That is something I need to know. Has nobody in the Republican Congress ever hit a fucking home run?
I don't believe that for a second,
That needs to be publicly available knowledge.
Do you believe that Republican shirts versus skins baseball games are not, the box scores aren't publicly Googleable?
Dude, hold on. But think about this for 1 second. Don't you think a lot of Republican voters would change their vote based upon knowing that they're giant wussies?
Don't you think that a lot of the people that are the most electable as Republicans also have a history as being athletes? Like, there's a lot of...
Do they?
I think so. I think
Ford did?
Well, I mean, not a lot of the old people necessarily. But the younger people, like Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan can hit a dinger.
There's
no doubt about it.
You think so?
I guarantee
it. I want to find out.
I guarantee it.
Jim Jordan, I challenge you
to
hit a home run off of my curveball.
I bet Romney's got wheels.
Romney is a no.
But he was a governor. He probably wasn't welcome.
Romney is the weakest of tees there's ever been.
Romney's got wheels. He could hit it inside the park home run.
If
By the way, they don't play in a park now. Well, I guess it's a park, but there's no wall.
If I swear to God, I think this is true. If they had just shown video of Mitt Romney running, he would never have won the GOP nomination.
Also,
like if people just saw him try and run, they would look at him and he would look like a baby duck. It would be pathetic.
I understand also that at this point, like Ron Paul in his time in the House has been there for like since 1975.
Yeah, he's like
he's been there forever. So he's really old at this point, but he's been there forever.
Right.
So maybe he hit that home run 20 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't fucking know. No one's ever hit it. Why do you keep playing that?
I don't know.
So everyone can hit bloops? Get the fuck out of here.
Bear Sasha Cohen went after him. Ron Paul, you know, basically slapped him upside the head, pushed him out of the way. Ron Paul is a nice guy because he's aggressive. It's aggressive people have trained themselves to be friendly. But he needs to turn loose and open up a can of you-know-what.
Whoop-ass.
He needs to say, listen, I've been given less time than everybody else up here. I've won most of the straw polls. I've come in first, second, and third in all the scientific polls, but everybody says I can't win. That's
What's
because I'm the only
science,
one up
Ron?
Here not bought and paid for. I'm not a globalist whore. You want America back. You want the republic back. Vote for me and stop letting the controlled media tell you who's going to win. And I'm going to go further here and then just basically lay out the facts.
Alex doesn't say what the facts are, but I don't know what Ron Paul's version of the facts would be, but
I would be interested to know what those were.
I guess like his whole entire speech there about what Ron needs to do is like just be a fucking dick, which is interesting.
Be a Somali pirate.
Well, it's very interesting on that level, but then also in terms of like what we know from the 2016 election.
Right.
When he's in support of Rand Paul and he keeps saying, Rand, be aggressive, be an asshole. And Rand won't do it.
But who
Trump
winds up
will.
Being an asshole
and
in
Alex,
the exact way that Alex just asked Ron Paul to.
It's interesting to see this like sort of same advice being given to this guy's dad, and both generations can't follow through with it, but then eventually one guy can. So Alex is like real defensive about Ron Paul.
I wonder why.
He's pissed off that everybody doesn't like him as much as they should like him.
But he's so likable.
But here's the thing. Alex keeps presenting that he's in the top three, right?
And first, second, or third.
The top three is always the best in everything, which Alex will lay out in this clip, and I will rebut on the other end.
The top three is the top tier. I actually have to disagree with Ron Paul. This thing about I'd be in the first or second tier. You're definitely in the top tier. The top tier is the top three candidates. First, second, and third place. That's how any game, any race works. The top three are the main contenders. The top three teams in the NBA, the NFL, the National Baseball League. That's
how
it works.
Any of those work.
In horse racing.
Horse racing is the closest he's come because of like place show and
I was gonna say, doesn't he know
like
about
an exacta box?
Doesn't he know about conferences and oh man,
it's never an odd number. It's always like the final four
for 5 years. The top three teams were in the West in the NBA, and then there was just LeBron, and that was it. It was LeBron versus the West.
Yeah, there is nothing that depicts reality about the top three being the contenders.
Yeah, right.
It's nonsensical.
Is insane.
And the examples that he is using, like I could come up with a better one, like the Olympics, gold, silver, and bronze.
That makes sense.
But they aren't contenders. That's the end result. The three people who came in first, second, and third are the people who get rewarded.
They're the contenders.
The person who gets bronze can't still win, or what? You know, like
they're in the top three.
Well, they won in the sense that they got a medal or whatever. But like, you can't become the gold medalist by coming in third. It's the only time that the top three are important are horse racing and the Olympic Games, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the top three are only important after it's done.
I was going to say, isn't he describing odds? He's just describing betting odds. He's describing odds makers.
Maybe.
Like, cause even if you've watched the Olympics, like there, it's the top three, it's like the three teams to watch in Olympic ice skating. Does not mean that they're
No.
It doesn't mean you're the best.
Nope.
It means people widely agree that
you show a lot of promise. You've had some good games this season. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything.
No.
Ugh. But I love the idea that he's presenting this like the top three are the contenders in all games.
Yeah. If the top three were contenders, the Washington Nationals would have won a World Series by now.
Yeah,
but
there
they
wouldn't be divisions.
They suck.
There wouldn't be divisions. There wouldn't be like the entire like. Just the foundations of sport.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What are you going to do?
He's just trying to make Ron feel better. So
that's a worthy goal.
Sure.
Let's be honest.
In this
Ron needs help.
This next clip, we're checking in on 2011.
Yep.
And it's interesting to see where some of these incongruous things that we talk about in 2009 come in. Anytime like something like this pops up, I like to make a point of it. In present day, Alex Jones is not into Iran. He does not like Iran.
Against him.
In 2009, he was pro-Iran.
They were great.
So where does he fall in 2011?
Bill Clinton, Mitt Romney, and Rick Perry and tell you they're great. And yes, then they sit there and say we've got to have war with Iran. When Ahmadinejad's about to be out of office, when the UN is in there, the reactors cannot produce weapons material. But so what? Dozens of countries have weapons. South Africa has nukes. We're going to attack them? The Russians had 10,000 nukes. We never had a war with them. Iran gets one nuke. They use them. They're a parking lot. What about somebody staging a nuke attack, though, to start World War III? To politically then get everybody to stand down and go along with the police state takeover. Did you ever think about that? Or is it too much fun to hate Ahmadinejad because he doesn't look like you?
Crazy. First of all, Alex is doing some sort of high ground racism argument there at the end, which is weird. But then also, I mean, that's a very pro-Iran sentiment.
You don't like those three girls in that pool supply store?
Because they don't look like you?
Because they don't look like you.
That's wild,
that
man.
That is weird.
It's very strange.
I don't understand what it is he is thinking he's doing, let alone what it is he is actually doing.
So up to at least 2011, he has a pretty solidly pro-Iran, or at least against demonizing Iran standpoint.
Yeah,
which is,
I mean,
that's interesting. That's pretty interesting that it extended this far.
It sounds like he's against American colonialism, which okay, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if you're advocating for anybody
wars, but that goes along with Ron Paul's.
not just that, but like the idea of advocating for a country to get a nuke. Is essentially saying, if you want to have a conversation with the United States, you better protect your neck. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he's saying. He's like, yeah, Iran should have a bomb, otherwise they're not going to be able to talk to us at all.
I don't think that's what he's saying. He's dismissing the very idea that the capabilities that they have will ever produce that or have any potential to produce that.
Okay, so that's why he put in the little nod to the UN saying that you can't weaponize this material.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, okay, I mean, yeah,
he's
I get that.
They aren't a threat in the way that people who make them a threat, like Bill Clinton and Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
They aren't.
And Rick Perry.
Yeah. They aren't that. They're not on that path.
Right.
Which is something that Alex will definitely, disagree with within a few years from this point.
For sure.
I'm not sure why, but it's,
I think it's probably because a black man made a deal.
I don't know. Because, I mean, Obama's president in 2011.
But he hasn't made the deal yet.
I know. It's
Once
weird.
He makes the deal, everybody
should,
goes apeshit.
By principle, he should be fine with that deal. Because if he before the deal,
not just fine with it, but like supporting.
Yeah, before before the deal, he's like, yeah, they aren't a threat.
Yeah,
that, you know, we should all keep it that way. And Obama makes a deal that will help keep it that way.
That black man did a thing.
It's hard not to feel that way.
I don't know. Pretty much explains a lot.
Can't really say that because we're just taking a snapshot of 2011. We don't know where it builds to or how it does.
It's
but.
Just going
to
be such a bummer if it's team sports.
Yeah, I know.
It's always about, like with Alex, that's one of the fun things about it is we get a random ass Somali pirate day. We're not just playing team sports all the time.
You hope that whatever this is, because it seems like it's big.
Yeah.
You hope that it comes from some principled place.
Yeah.
And there actually is like a tree breaking as opposed to a toothpick.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you hope that there's some like moment where it's like, no, this is too much.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that is.
No clue.
You hope that there's at least that presentation, but I mean, who knows? We know that we shouldn't give Alex much credit. I think we've learned that over the years.
Zero credit.
Anyway, in this next clip, Alex gets really defensive about how he knows a lot of stuff.
I'm supposed to just sit here and be calm and talk about how bad Obama is all day instead of how bad the entire system is. I want it to stop. I'm not a chump. I'm not a sucker. I'm not a schmuck. I'm not an idiot. I'm not a mark. I'm not here to be a slave. I'm not here to be an idiot. I know what's going on because it's in my face and I don't like it. All right. I said I'm going to your calls.
Cool.
Man, I have never heard a guy more loudly protest all of the things that he is and has proven himself to be before.
The only thing more...
That was like a laundry list of the things that he is in the present
day. The only thing more glaring I've ever heard is, I know how to read. Like, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know how to read.
You don't. So
yeah,
we can stop there.
That's just insecurities. He's just screaming about his insecurities. Like, I'm not dumb. I'm not getting fooled. You are getting fooled.
You are dumb.
You're willingly fooling yourself
with
these stupid fucking narratives. So, Jordan, our friend sent us on this time travel adventure to find out about Occupy Wall Street.
Because apparently he hates us.
And it turns out Alex has...
Thanks, Joshua.
Look, Joshua's great.
Joshua is a
but
great guy.
Alex
I'm
has
sorry
spent
about that.
17 clips up till this point not talking about Occupy Wall Street.
Wait, we're actually going to talk about Occupy Wall Street?
Finally, Alex gets to Occupy Wall Street, and let's see what his angle is, see who his expert on the streets is for Occupy Wall Street.
Luke Radowski on, founder of We Are Change, Great Patriot. He's reported for some large national news outlets like RT and others.
Like
He's
RT.
On
RT
with us right now. He's been in and out of the week-long demonstrations. They're in New York. There were a bunch of arrests. Some say 80, some say 100, some say 20. I don't know. I've got a bunch of articles about it.
You could look.
I know you've been there off and on. Peaceful people trying to demonstrate. Nowhere in Lower Manhattan is it allowed, just like China. But, oh, it's okay because we're America. And so you don't protest Wall Street, and the media is calling them communists, and certainly some of them are communists, but nobody's a bigger communist than Wall Street with their tens of trillions of bailout money stealing our cash and Wall Street funding socialism to steal our money. So, yeah, there's some dumb commies on the ground protesting their bosses, yes. But I'm told, Luke, most of these people are in the fetters that really know what's going on. Luke Radowski, tell us what's happening.
Most of these people are caring, loving Americans who want this system to end, screwing everybody over. Sadly, when all the action was going on yesterday, I was actually across on the other side of town, but
Surprise.
I ran to Union Square where all the arrests were happening.
So Luke Radowski wasn't even there. He was on the other side of New York.
There's only one place to be.
We got a man on the ground.
We're covering Occupy Wall Street. You should be where the Occupy Wall Street is.
Where was he? He was on the other side of town. He was getting a cronut. I don't know what the time frame is. I don't remember when the cronut happened.
Why?
I don't fucking know, man. He was just over there getting a bisque. He was having a soup. I don't know. He was just lollygagging. He was he's not a serious person. He's not. Lou Gradowski is not a serious person. He was hanging out in New York. Oh my God, what is this? The Occupy Wall Street thing is blowing up. So he ran across town and tried to get some after the fact interviews. He wasn't actually engaged with the people who were there.
That's really
who were
annoying.
Getting arrested. Of
That's
course not.
Really annoying.
Because Lou Gradowski is not interested in revolution either. Neither is Alex. None of these people are. Now, the important thing I think here is that Alex is wrong.
Yes.
About the way he's presenting this. He's spent an hour and 40 minutes or so of his show not talking about any of this.
What?
And then he gets to Lou Gradowski's interview and he says, I hear a bunch of these people are end the fetters, which is end the Federal Reserve.
Yes, I yeah.
That's not accurate. That wasn't a big piece of Occupy Wall Street.
No, I remember Occupy Wall Street. They were very insistent that there were only three members of Congress who voted for the Fed, and
their
rallying cry was, "The Fed was voted in by three
people."
Guys.
Ask my friend
those
Wayne.
Three guys out.
There might be some people, and maybe even like a contingent at some point. That were, Federal Reserve suspicious. There probably was at some point, but it wasn't a central tenet of the, OWS movement. It really wasn't. Even from the jump, it wasn't a destroy the Fed thing.
Absolutely not.
The Tea Party and Alex Jones and Ron Paul, those people were end the Fed type people. So Alex is imagining these people who are protesting against Wall Street, who are just dumb commies who don't realize they're protesting their bosses. He's minimizing the entire argument that people are making.
Right.
Maybe a lot of them are exactly like what I am, huh? Isn't that interesting?
But
you remember that? Remember that long list on the other hand
yeah.
that I made at the beginning of this? It was intentional. Like Alex is in the exact same zigzag pattern that the intro of this episode is, like the episode beginning was, like I don't think he knows where to land. I think that he's mad that the police are oppressing these people.
Yeah,
he likes that they're making fun of the banks.
He also likes that the specific people who are being oppressed are being oppressed, though.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely that.
They're being actually oppressed as opposed to imaginary oppressed.
Yeah.
They're being pepper sprayed and dragged by nets.
He's a man without a country in this particular. He's our Kurt Vonnegut on
these
the scene.
These people
here.
Out there at Occupy Wall Street might as well be Somali pirates because you can't help but admire them.
It is interesting, specifically because I remember the way your mainstream right wing outlets covered this at the time, which was pure like. These commies wanna blah, blah. So
it seemed that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Tea Party arose and they were like, oh, these people are fighting for economic freedom. They're definitely not reacting because there's a black guy who's president. And then these people who are fighting for an economic freedom, they were like, they're just protesting because they want to overthrow the government.
Right.
Like, yeah, we got it. I do guess that I appreciate Alex for waffling. I guess that's net zero in his win-loss column.
I think it's a more sinister position, honestly. Like
inactivity is activity, if you will.
It's not inactivity. He's not willing to like really take a stand. Like he's against the idea that these protesters got arrested, but he's also still denigrating them.
Right.
You know,
right.
And he's also clearly not on board with what Occupy Wall Street stands for. At this point.
Which is not getting fucked over.
And he's pretending that he understands better what they want than they even do.
No, like they want child, to not get fucked
little,
over.
Little child, little communist stooge.
Alex, we would prefer to not be fucked over.
I understand that you're mad at your boss, communist stooge.
No, he's not even our boss.
But I know better. I know better. Look, I understand.
Who the fuck are you?
You don't think he's your boss, but he is.
But he's not our boss.
Look, he's paying you. Soros!
I'm a courier.
This whole time he's talking about the Occupy Wall Street stuff. Doesn't
bring up Soros. Oh, he just not brought up Soros once.
Doesn't bring it up at all.
That's odd.
Weird. So, I think that I have an angle on this. at least in terms of like September 25th, 2011. I don't think that Alex gives a shit about much of this. He sees potential there. And I think in this next clip, you'll be able to see what that potential is.
Okay, so this is going to happen right now. All Info Warriors in the New York area. Where do they converge again, Luke?
Liberty Plaza by City Hall, right in between Wall Street. We're all there. You can't.
What do you think? You're going to stand at the Liberty Plaza? What do you think this is, America? Let's beat the people up at the Liberty Plaza.
That's just his Bernie impression, but he's doing it as a New York cop who's mad at the people who are gathering. He's telling all the info warriors in New York to go to the Occupy
Wall.
Was
Bernie working as a cop at that time?
Bernie was a detective.
In 2011, was Bernie a grizzled detective?
He was.
He perhaps
he was just a week away from getting his pension.
Was he perhaps too old for this shit?
He was just about to retire.
He might have been.
But he had to train a young buck. Yeah.
We've seen this movie.
What Alex is presenting here, I think, is a perfect synthesis of his early Occupy Wall Street position. I don't know entirely, but I'm going to guess that he hasn't talked much about it before this because he doesn't seem to care much. Doesn't seem to care much the day after a ton of people get arrested and oppressed. Peaceful protesters getting jammed up, protesting against Wall Street, which seems like something he'd be so into. He spent most of his show talking about bullshit, like dissecting the Who, like all this stuff. He spent that much time doing that shit. He spends 4 minutes talking about Occupy Wall Street at all.
Mm.
The day after, probably one of the most, like, if you really look at the, like, of course, when the police came in and took all the tents out and stuff like, that was much more of a, like, encroachment.
Right.
But, like, this was one of the biggest early warning shots of, like, this is getting serious.
Mm-hmm.
Alex doesn't give a shit. He doesn't. Nope. I don't think he knew before this, but I bet he will. I bet he will. Because
you think he'll give a shit later?
Well, because based on that clip, that last clip, what I heard from him is all you info warriors go down there because I think he thinks they can co-opt them. I honestly think that that is his position. In the same way with the Tea Party in 2009 that we've seen when he talked to Stuart Rhodes about, like, this Tea Party is a place where we can find people and then we can educate them about the Federal Reserve and all this
shit. Yeah.
I think he views the Occupy Wall Street movement as like, hey, look, maybe some of them self-identify as commies because they're fucking dumb and they don't know who their boss is, but we can red pill those bitches down there and we can figure this out. And then before you know it, Ron Paul Revolution 2.0.
Hmm.
I honestly think that that's probably the position he's coming from.
I don't think that's wrong.
Info Warriors all go down to this park. Let's flood this. Let's tell them the truth. We got Luke Radowski across town when action happens, but he's somewhere. He's around. I don't know. I find this to be a very dishonest.
Info Warriors who live in New York. Luke Radowski is around. Start looking.
Try to do a better job than him.
You know how easy it is to find a human being in New York. They could be anywhere. It's a small space.
I find this to be, like, on a journalistic level, negligent. And then on a narrative level, like, from what I would expect from Alex, just terrible. Like,
and he's still 2011.
I understand that, but in 2011, he was more on his brand than ever, and his brand was hating the banks.
That's true.
This should be, this
should be his opus.
No matter what, like, positive or negative, in or out, whatever the case is, he should have a rock solid position a week into this movement happening.
Yeah.
Like, the people, like, occupying Zuccotti Park, like, he shouldn't have ambivalence about it. He should either, like, I understand day one not knowing what you think, but a week in, like, it started on the 17th. We're talking about the 25th. He has a week from the day before this show for everything to play out and get his bearings, figure out what he thinks about it. He doesn't think anything about it except, maybe we can twist them into hating the Federal Reserve.
See, the problem is that that seems like a bit of a rebuttal to so many arguments we've had, where when we're talking about, oh, he's changed his principles in the present day as compared to where they were in the past. Well, in 2011, if he were following his stated principles, he would be all for Occupy Wall Street.
Not really.
Because it's not like they...
Not really, because they're very left and anti... they want to tear down a lot of...
Right.
And regulate markets and stuff like that, much like William Black.
Occupy Wall Street put out a bunch of... stated policy positions?
Yep.
Like they,
which are against Alex's interests.
No. I know what you're saying. I, and they did. They did do that. But the Occupy Wall Street as a movement was not centered around, like, we're gonna send these policy proposals to in the same way that the Tea Party wasn't a movement that was built around, we're sending policy proposals to It is something that ideologically, the idea of a group of people nonviolently
leaderless
protesting.
Leaderless resistance.
Exactly.
Like, except his, in this version,
his
it's not
principles,
Nazis.
His principles didn't mean shit in 2011, and they don't mean shit in 2016, and they don't mean shit now,
no.
And they don't mean shit in 2009.
No.
Like,
but,
that's
not
what
news.
This, to me, to
of
me,
course.
This is nice to know, is that, like, there wasn't any shift on principles ever.
No.
The principles have always been, I want Nazis in the White House.
And to double down on this, I honestly believe, like, from everything I can tell, Alex eventually ends up liking Occupy Wall Street.
That motherfucker.
Because I think that he thinks he can co-opt it the same way he co-opted the Tea Party.
Right.
And so I think it'll be an interesting, I want to do a full investigation of this.
Yeah.
I really do, because I want to understand it better. I want to understand the path.
Yeah.
I don't want to know, hey, on the 25th, he was dismissive of it, but also thought he could co-opt it.
Right.
And then, mid-October, he's a fan of it.
Right.
I don't want to know those two data points. I want to understand the progression through them. And I can't do service to that until we can do service to that. And so I think that our next investigation will 100% be walking through this period of time. Because it's not that long. Occupy Wall Street didn't go on that long. It was only a couple
no,
of months.
It really was.
But I think that you'll see Alex really, really change his positions. And I think that I think that would be a very interesting and robust piece of how little he cares about his principles.
I agree. When we do that investigation, let's all agree to come back and listen to this episode where I say my prediction is Alex is dismissive of Occupy Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
then says they have some good points, then says they're good, and then very quickly says they're evil.
And then
that is my progression.
And then
I think.
Tries to present himself as the real version of it.
Exactly.
They've been co-opted
yes.
or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. I would bet a lot of money on that progression.
I think
being
he
correct.
Probably kind of does that a lot, which actually should maybe make us suspicious that, like, in the present day.
Oh, maybe he's gonna turn on Trump and then be like, I was the real Trump the whole time.
Not I'm the real Trump.
Yeah. Maybe he is Trump.
That he's not going to pull that kind of prestige.
What if he pulls his mask off?
No.
This is Mission Impossible.
No.
Are you sure this isn't a Mission Impossible?
He will be like, look, we didn't leave the party.
Trump left the party.
That sort of thing. Like he could pull something like that in the future.
It turns
and
out
it would
we
be
were
right
the
on
Trump
brand.
And Trump wasn't Trump,
yeah.
but we were yeah. Trump.
We made yeah. Trump, which he also says
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know.
He's got a lot of options, and yet at the same time, he has nowhere to go. He's
right.
a fascinating human being.
Yeah, I know. So I think Alex is done talking about Occupy Wall Street. I don't think he has a real position on it in any meaningful way. I mean, it's just a weird stasis he's in. You know, he's for the idea of hating the banks. He's against what they stand for.
Mm-hmm.
He hates the idea that the people are being oppressed by the police.
Right.
But also doesn't want to defend these dumb commies. He's in a real
difficult
he's in a bind. Position.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I'm interested to see how it evolves, because it has to evolve. I mean, it can't not from this point forward. But we have one last clip, and It's just sort of a icing on the cake. This whole, most of this episode really was about Ron Paul.
Yeah, I...
And about how much Alex wants Ron Paul to be elected president.
How often is it that at the end of our episodes you go, most of this episode was the thing that we talked about very tertiarily?
Not often. So...
Most of this episode was actually about Somali pirates.
Oh, or The Who.
Yeah, The Who.
So... Alex gets a call at the end of the show, and it's a call who's trying to explain to him, like, Ron Paul can't fix everything. Are you fucking delusional?
Mm-hmm.
And then Alex sets him straight in a way that kind of invalidates a lot of the things he thinks about Donald Trump in present day.
You and I and most of your listeners know that our vote doesn't count. I've met Ron Paul. He's a nice guy, but does he have a standing army, a fort, air defense artillery to keep him working if he was to be a president?
Okay, listen, he'll be injecting ideas. Ideas are bulletproof. And so by him running, he would win, exposing the whole system. If you just have an attitude, one guy's got to fix it all, it's never going to happen. Ron Paul, by running, is illustrating all their dirty tricks.
If you have this position that one guy can fix it all, you're an idiot. That's what he's saying. And now, in the present day, Donald Trump is the fucking truth. This one guy, because he's been a sleeper patriot for all his life.
Sleeper patriot.
By the way, he's run for president before 2011.
When, raised by a Nazi.
Well, certainly. Who knows? This is all just stupid. Anyway, I don't know. Joshua, I appreciate you sending us on this time travel adventure. I don't think that we found really a firm position about Alex Jones and Occupy Wall Street. But I think we found enough that we will certainly tease this thread and find out more in the future.
Indeed.
It's
so weird when we do the time travel episodes, because unlike with 2009 or with 2015, we don't have like a fucking 6-week exploration into why it is that he's thinking this shit right now. Time travel True. Episodes are so bananas crazy because we're like, does this mean something? Does it? I don't know. It doesn't? I don't know.
I accept I probably missed some context clues, but like a lot of his narratives.
Well, did you listen to every episode between January 1st, 2011 and December 31st, 2011?
Certainly not, but.
Well, then who the fuck knows what he's talking about ever?
I knew that he was mostly just talking about Ron Paul's failed campaign.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Fair enough. We'll give you that.
I mean, I picked up on those clues. But there might have been some other things that I didn't pick up on and you know.
We just figured out Ron's clues.
We'll sweep that up when we get back to a more exhaustive examination of the Occupy Wall Street
Which
period.
We almost certainly will within the next 6 to 12 years.
Yes, it will be next after 2009. So, look, this has been fun. Jordan, I got nothing to sum this up other than to say we have a website.
Do we have a website?
We do. It's
Where?
Knowledgefight.com. Also, fillyourhand.com.
How do you find it, though?
You just type it in and hit enter.
And type it into what?
Good. Bing. Alta Vista. GoDaddy. Ask Jeeves. Netscape Navigator.
That's the one I was waiting for, Dan.
We also.
All right. You got to type into your Netscape Navigator https.
Yep. S secured.
Yeah. KN knowledge fight with a K.
Right.
Of course.
It's silent.
Is it silent?
Knowledge.
Knowledge?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, we're also on, I've been saying it wrong for so long.
We're also on Twitter. No
we
silent
are.
K.
At @knowledge_fight.
Right. We're also on Facebook.
Indeed we are. You can go join our group. Go home and tell your mother you're brilliant.
Yep. On iTunes, what have you, all that good stuff. But for now,
who among our cast of characters today has not probably definitely committed murder?
I think Luke Radowski is a shithead and all that stuff, but I don't think he's ever killed anybody.
Prove it.
I mean, no, you ask me to prove a negative.
See, there you go. You can't do it.
But okay.
It's the tale as old as time.
Fine. Like Bradley Cooper. Prove he's never killed anybody.
I can't.
Exactly.
There we go.
I will say that much like Bradley Cooper probably hasn't killed anybody, same is true of Luke Radowski. Just an ineffectual propagandist, and God bless him, he's never killed anybody. But one guy
has. Do you
know
anybody who has definitely, almost probably, technically killed a guy?
I heard this about this guy.
Who?
He probably, totally, definitely, allegedly killed a guy.
From whom?
Himself. He said it himself. That guy is Alex Jones.
Stop.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.